Hello, everybody. This is Bill Cameron from The Drive. Podcasts of The Drive are presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors, now hiring for great-paying skilled trade positions. Call 334-209-6355 to learn more. Thanks for listening.
The following is an Auburn Network production. Live from Auburn, the sports capital of Alabama, this is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome into the Wednesday edition of The Drive. Hope everybody doing well. Another gorgeous day here in the Auburn area. Hope everybody doing well. And, yes, we're here ready to talk with you, Bill, Dan, Jason Caldwell from Auburn Undercover here in the studio on this Wednesday afternoon. And you can join us by calling The Drive hotline sponsored by Skybar. That number is 334-321-1390.
You can also text the show 334-564-1840 on the Drive text box presented by our friends at Southeastern Industrial Contractors. They also sponsor the podcast, which you can get however you get your favorite podcast. Big thanks to our friends at Southeastern Industrial Contractors for everything they do for us.
Mm-hmm. As we mentioned, Jason Caldwell in the studio with us. JC, how you doing, man?
I'm good. Enjoying nice weather, and it's supposed to be awesome for Friday night, Saturday. Mm-hmm. Enjoying the bye week, but go out on Friday night. So looking forward to some high school football on Friday, and just what could be a really good day on Saturday. There's a lot of good games for sure, at least on paper.
Well, I mean, this season there've been a lot more interesting ball games, I think, every week than we expect. I mean, what a crazy year it has been. I don't think there's any question the transfer portal has changed things, and teams just about any team can be in trouble if they're not really ready. And there's so many teams that you used to just take for granted that you better not anymore.
It has absolutely been 180 degrees from what I thought this was going to be. When this happened, I thought this Alabama, Georgia,
the best
Ohio
are just going to get better,
and they have added players.
Mm-hmm.
But in return, they've also lost guys that were key depth guys.
Right. Not necessarily their stars, yeah, or even their starters, but players who that really can
impact,
can absolutely impact other teams.
And it shows up. You look, and the depth issue for teams isn't as good. We saw Georgia on Saturday. Georgia's still a good football team. There wasn't a mile of difference between Auburn and Georgia. Now, line of scrimmage was still the difference.
Right.
And
even, that's no question.
But the bottoms have come up.
Even the programs that are best positioned in the NIL space aren't stockpiling talent the way people were worried they were going to be able to.
No.
When these, and
because
I think
you can't do that.
I think that the immediate eligibility for undergraduate transfers opened up the possibility of because before, you could sign a five-star at a high school, and even if you had multiple options ahead of him at the position, it was highly unlikely he was going to leave as a freshman or a sophomore because he would have to sit out a year.
Right. Yeah.
If he stayed at the D1 level. Now that freshmen and sophomores can leave and they are immediately eligible wherever they go, it's harder than ever. It's a luxury to have depth that you've seen and that you trust.
And developed.
And that you've developed.
That's the difference. That's it. Yeah. And that's where you look at it right now, the difference. And hey, Auburn should be better than 2-4. I don't think anybody's going to disagree with that. They should mm-hmm. be a better team than 2-4. But you look at that, and I answered a question. Well, it wasn't a question. It was a post by Kevin Skarbinski, and he's talking about how this could be a 4-game losing streak. It never had one of those under Gus Malzahn. I said, okay. I said, but the last 3 years under Gus and the two Harsin years, Auburn signed a total of 9 high school offensive linemen in 5 classes. Georgia signed 24 Alabama's probably very similar to that number. That's to that point. You might not have to develop a skill guy. Keandre Lambert-Smith, you knew what that guy was. And you might be able to get a guy like that. But offensive lineman and defensive lineman, to get a guy that is the caliber, the guy you're looking for to be a difference maker, you and every other team in the country are looking for the same guy. Because everybody in the country will have a need for that guy in the portal. Mm-hmm. I don't care who it is. And so to go get three or four of those guys on each side of the ball and expect to go get guys that are going to be those guys, it's an impossibility. It's
that's,
not going
to
happen.
Yeah, that's why you have to be in the situation that Hugh Freeze talked about.
You got to develop.
Have your own and then hope and then that you're only, you know, hope that you only have to add a spot
that's
or
it.
Two.
That's it.
And I told you in Athens when I ran into you at the, you know, the press stuff afterward, like, and I guess I'm going to, you know, you can put me in the asylum in the straitjacket and I'll still be repeating this like after the season's over. I feel like the offense is close. Like I feel like they're close.
No question about it.
And they're like, for folks who want to see widespread changes on the offense with regards to personnel, or they want to see a youth movement of, you know, bench all the seniors and juniors and, you know, whatever. Like to me, like
offensive numbers are markedly better than they've been. It's just it's not resulting in points.
Yeah, no, yeah. Well, and that's the thing.
That's a ridiculous thing to say.
Well, it didn't Saturday. They've scored more points. I mean, Oklahoma's a pretty good defense.
Right.
They scored enough points in that.
But I mean, only 14 each against Cal and Arkansas.
Yeah,
I mean,
but so that was turnovers.
And I would say even with the complaint that I've, you know, every time I've been near a microphone now for like a week and a half, I've been, you know, questioning, like, the numbers really suggest that the running back should touch it more than they have, you know, in the first six games. You know, I think against you can wonder about, and I guess there's a lot of factors to consider there. But it does seem like if there's a reengineering, if there's a recalibration anywhere, I would think it's trying to run more of the offense through Damari and Jarquez than they have thus far. But I think you've seen better offense. Like as the things that were most alarming about the offense against Cal, like if you think back to what we were talking about after the Cal game, I think since Thorne went back in against Arkansas, a lot of that has improved. Yes, they need to win more games, but if you're talking about the criticisms you would have had, about the offense. The biggest one, I'd say the biggest one that hasn't really been fixed is the question of why aren't the running backs touching the ball more, which is something, you know, I'm sure has been discussed on your side as well.
Yeah, and I wrote about it because we're doing kind of a position breakdown, and today was running backs, and I had the running back position, and said, look, those guys have to be more involved. Saturday was a little bit of a little bit of an outlier because in the fourth quarter, you're down against a team that you're
down
have
two
to
scores.
13 of Peyton Thorne's pass attempts were in the fourth quarter. So a little bit different there, but there were opportunities. And so you start going, look, where you have to make sure you pick and choose because you still have to throw the football. Because early on, week two or three, had people going, well, why don't you just do what Michigan does? Just run the ball every play. Okay, well, what's Michigan doing right now? They're heading towards 7-5 with a roster that's still pretty – a year removed from winning the national championship. You got to be able to throw it. The reason why the run game has been pretty good is because they've made plays in the passing game.
It's getting harder and harder, by the way. I want to hear you, but it's getting harder and harder to say, well, do what that team in another conference is doing and expect it to work.
Because you have different makeups. The rosters are different. You look at – everything is completely different. And so I thought Georgia – was the first time this year where you saw somebody that went, we're not going to let you throw the ball deep. We're going to make sure that you take this. And they said, look, we're good enough up front to win with five. Now, they did blitz them, and they did a pretty good job of run blitzing on first down, and it actually worked into some pass rush stuff too. But for the most part, defensively, going into last week, that was my question mark, and it proved to be the bigger question mark. So that defense was more of a question mark to me Saturday than offense was because you couldn't get off the field again.
Right.
Couldn't create a pass rush other than Keldrick. And when Keldrick got banged up, it was
there was no pass rush.
And you can't send seven or eight I mean, because you're still not gonna get there.
The inability that was it. The inability to get them off the field. That's happened a few times this year. I mean, first drive it was because of a penalty, and we've seen that a couple of times this year. Auburn's about to get a three and out on the first possession of the game, and it ends up being a long touchdown.
Yeah,
drive.
Yeah, no.
And then the touchdown before half, where if Auburn could have held them to just a field goal. I mean,
there were that was Saturday was mistakes, but it wasn't turnovers.
Right.
And it shows you the magnitude still of what you're chasing. What you're chasing is to be able to have a roster to where those two or three mistakes don't impact you. And you're not there yet, because that play, you make a play like that and you're not good enough to overcome having too many guys on the field. Even though they weren't in the play.
No,
you made the stop.
No.
And then offensively, you're coming off your goal line to get 5 yards on first down, false start. Georgia
right.
was not going to call a timeout.
No, they weren't. They were going to let the clock. It was going to go to the half.
You were going to run the clock out. It was going to be 7-3.
7-3 at the half.
You have to end up punting because they use their timeouts, and then they run the football, and you have a one-on-one open field opportunity,
yep,
miss a tackle.
They hit the big run, yep.
Mm-hmm. A crucial difference, though, I think, between Auburn's third down defense against Georgia and Auburn's third down defense against Arkansas was that Auburn was getting Arkansas into
Arkansas
third and long.
Arkansas was third and long. Georgia and did a great job of second
three,
and short, third and
two.
And
you can do whatever you want to.
And even acknowledging the talent discrepancy, even acknowledging that 100 out of 100 coaches would probably take Georgia's offense over, you know what I mean? Like in that situation, Mike Bobo called a really effective game. Like, I thought he had answers for the stuff Auburn tried on first down, and it was second. And I mean,
it's funny.
I know.
Georgia
folks thought it was bad.
Yeah, Georgia folks did. Are just
on first down. It was second and short, and reasonable.
And there's some people complaining about his fourth down and like, oh, he thought he was too aggressive. I thought it was perfect because they knew Auburn wasn't going to get home, so it was pitch and catch. Mm-hmm. I mean, that Saturday showed you. Like, Auburn had a good plan, I thought. In theory, do not give up the big play. Auburn's defense has been good in the red zone. Okay, look, we're gonna not give up the big play, and then in the red zone try to hold them to field goals. Just weren't able to do it.
Yeah, unable to.
And they when you score four touchdowns,
the touchdown before the half and the touchdown right after Auburn cut it to 14-10.
Yeah. I
mean, two opportunities there to really have the momentum down four. And they couldn't. And both times, Georgia did what a good team.
That's it. You had a third and four. They throw a deep ball up on a freshman and make a good play for a guy who's probably now off the team. Makes that big catch.
Right.
And then, Auburn has a chance to kind of stay in at the fourth and one. And obviously, no matter the situation, whether it's called, not called, the wrong read was made. I mean, that wasn't the right read, whatever it was. And so, no matter what, call a timeout.
Absolutely.
Hey, here's the thing.
Absolutely.
Peyton Thorne's played a lot of football, too.
You
can call a timeout, too. The quarterback can turn around and go, hey, I want a timeout. Like, you can – both guys could go, hey, it just didn't happen. That's a mistake. Would you have scored? Maybe, maybe not. But there was a play early on. It may have been later in the fourth quarter. It may have been that drive. I can't remember. But we were talking about it in postgame. Peyton Thorne rolls out and throws the ball with pressure in his face, and Rivaldo Fairweather is – 15 yards behind anybody, and there's nobody around. It's a wide open touchdown. You just didn't see.
There are two throws, I think, where if I think Peyton would have probably wanted him back. There's the throw where he cuts it, he throws it short, and if you look back, Rivaldo's starting to break.
Yes, he had to hold the ball a little bit longer.
Behind, I think Peyton throws it sort of short to like a curl route in front
to,
of him instead.
It was to Keandre Lambert-Smith,
yes.
I think.
Yeah,
yes,
he throws a shorter route to Keandre, but yeah, Rivaldo's breaking behind everybody, and then there's the throw where Peyton is rolling out, and it feels like he's got Keandre open in the end zone, and it's just a hair too late.
Again, pressured, I think. Yeah,
and he doesn't get the throw he wants
get it to him because he couldn't get enough on it.
Yeah, and so I mean, there's a couple, and I think Peyton would have probably wanted to throw one a little bit earlier but for the most part, again, the main criticisms you would have of the biggest criticisms have they need to keep turning the corner. But I think they've shown, if you think about since like the things that were most concerning about the offense coming out of Cal some of those have shown improvement since then.
Yeah, some have. Now, I think you hit the nail on the head. I mean, back preseason. I mean, it's up front is the concern for Auburn on both sides. I mean, Auburn needs they still need help at tackle offensively, and they need help inside defensively up front.
Those are the spots. You know, and I had questions about was Percy Lewis good enough. I don't think he's good enough to get to where you need to get to. To me, we'll see if Tyler Johnson gets a whole lot of work between now and Missouri and go, hey
don't you think? I mean, Auburn needs at least one tackle in the transfer portal.
Yeah, they were going to do that anyway. Mm-hmm. Go find a guy that you feel like can plug in, do those things. You know, they have signed and recruited well, and Tyler Johnson, I think, is a guy that has NFL ability. Now, if he comes out and says, "Hey, I'm going to take it over in the second half," and looks the part, it might change what you're doing. But you still probably going to do that anyway because Tutal has not shown the ability to stay healthy. Mm-hmm. That's been a concern. You got some other guys there, Seth Wilford and some of these young guys.
I wonder how much Tutal we're seeing the rest of the season. I just had a bad feeling watching him double over kind of the second time.
It feels like it's kind of been the same story. You know, get good for a little while.
Right.
Now, here's the thing. You got a week and a half. Can you get healthy enough to where you get over whatever you're dealing with right now? That's a question. But defensively, it's exactly my biggest concern for this team, and it's shown up. It wasn't as much of a factor because you haven't played teams that could throw the ball down the field.
Right.
Missouri can, and Brady Cook can run. But you look at it, I mean, Vanderbilt doesn't throw it around a ton, but they got guys that could – I mean, got a quarterback that'll make a bunch of plays.
Pavia.
Texas A&M's got a quarterback that'll make plays. Yep. Jalen Milroe is a quarterback that'll make plays.
Mm-hmm. Missouri's got to be wondering if they've got the offensive line to hang with the. I mean, they're about to play Alabama, Oklahoma, and Auburn in three straight weeks. Starting with Auburn, like that's a.
Oh, I think, you know, somebody's like, oh man, that was bad to see. Now, the best thing that could ever happen would happen last week because you just don't go, oh well, we're great, we just had a bad week and lose 41-10. When you lose like that, you go, whew, we're not as good as what
we got
are.
Problems.
And that's it. And so
that's a loss. You learn something. You
learn something bad.
That's right.
Yeah, you don't learn anything good off a loss like
that. All right,
that.
We need to get to our first break of the afternoon. Ed, hold on. You'll be up first on the drive. Well, did he hang up? All right, we didn't give the numbers, did we, or did we? The Drive Hotline sponsored by Skybar. You can get at the top of the line, 334-321-1390. We're just underway here on the Wednesday Drive.
This is Lee County Revenue Commissioner Olene Price. When we have the opportunity to...
Welcome back into the Wednesday Drive. Bill, Dan, Jason Caldwell, and Spector, hold on just a second. I want to get some quick thoughts from Jason on the news coming out today. The NCAA is doing away with the national letter of intent.
They already didn't have to sign it, I guess.
You
could just basically sign a scholarship paper and show up. So
now it's scholarship papers or financial agreements.
Yes, whatever it is. So, yes.
The financial agreements, yes, I think,
that's going to be
that's going to be the main thing. Because the scholarship –
contract.
Yes, the scholarship agreements only are binding to the school.
If you were to go there. Yeah, correct.
So it's going to be the financial agreements are going to be the only binding things.
This
for
is
the
heading
players.
Towards what I thought
contracts,
was gonna, which is I thought was going to happen. It's like, okay, here we are. You got to give us 2 years, and the third year, that's an option if you're gone. But you got to give us 2 years, and if you leave after one, then you owe us the remaining part of that deal. It's going
to
happen.
That makes perfect sense to me.
It makes sense. I hate it with every fiber of my being.
Sure.
That's where we are right now. But that's what you have to do to create some semblance of continuity.
To have a little bit of control over your roster.
Yeah, absolutely.
A little bit of control over your roster. And they also announcing that the portal windows, there'd been talk about 30 days for and it just one period of 30 days for all sports. They're sticking with the winter and spring windows in football, but they're cutting it to 20 days in the winter. That's December 9th through 28th this year. And 10 days in the spring, April 15th or 16th through 25th. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I don't know. It's such a – I mean, we've talked about it. I don't know that shortening it makes any – now it's just going to create even more chaos.
It's
I don't know. There's no good way
going on at the same time.
There's no good way to do it.
In December,
everybody seems to. I mean, I understand why players like it because it gives them the option. You know, it's an extra little bit of freedom. But the spring portal window seems to be very unpopular with
coaches for sure.
And administrators because of the uncertainty it creates in your roster after January.
You'd love to have
a very good idea. Of what
you have for the spring.
You generally
go through spring practice, and then anybody can leave.
In January, in theory, I mean, think about the way it used to be. In January, you had a pretty good idea what you were going to look like in September.
In the fall, yes.
In September. And if you take the spring window away, you can bring some of that back for coaches, which I think would be appreciated, yes, you can have a graduate. I think a graduate portal market is different.
Correct.
You shouldn't be worried about losing a freshman or a sophomore after spring practice. I get that.
And what's the dates now?
April 16th through 25th is the spring window, and December 9th through 28th. Merry Christmas.
And that's the thing. Like the problem.
And happy bowl practice.
Here's that's it. And whatever else.
Playoffs.
The problem is that you're right. In the spring, you go. It'd be great to go. Now everything happens in December, January. But as soon as you try to do that, the first time somebody says, well, that's not fair to me because my coach leaves or my position coach is gone and I can't transfer because of that.
Somebody's going to challenge it
and they're going to bow down.
Especially because it does seem to be tied in this Wild West system, your eligibility, your ability to play is directly tied to your ability to earn money. On the NIL market, and so any restriction on a player's eligibility seems to be losing. If they put in a more structured system, until then,
you're right. And honestly, to say NIL is just, and I think about it all the time, I just start laughing.
Yeah,
There's nothing NIL about NIL. I saw the other day.
It is pay per play.
I saw it the other day, and Boise State guys are making money for sacks. I'm like, well, that's as straight up as you can get. I mean, that's as pay. Like it'd be basically going like, hey, for every time, Miles Kelly makes a 3-pointer, he'll get $100. Well, that is rewarding somebody for playing.
Guys used to get suspended for that.
Yes, and now they're doing it, and nobody cares because that's NIL. Well, that's not NIL.
334-321-1390. We'll talk more about that in a little while. But Spectre's been hanging on for a few minutes. Hey, Spectre, how you doing today?
Spectre,
I'm good. Don't know why Ed hung up now. Hello.
Yeah, we're here. Go ahead. Well, I just figured that's the biggest story today, and we hadn't mentioned it. I just sort of wanted to get that out there.
Yeah, I understand, Bill. Callers come first. Listen, maybe you three guys can tell me why freshman quarterbacks aren't getting any playing time on games that are already decided.
What game's been decided?
The Georgia game, for one.
Well, it was an 11-point game
in the fourth quarter.
Because if that was decided, that would have meant Oklahoma should have changed quarterbacks.
That's it, Spectre. I've heard people advocating for making a quarterback switch. You know, while the game is still in play, I hadn't really heard. I would agree with these guys. I don't know if there's been opportune moments where maybe there was a drive at the end of Georgia where you were.
Let me say this before y'all get to talking again. You know, if you can put a guy in for one series, put him in for one series. If that's all the time you got, put him in for one series. But I'm hearing it day in and day out. Well, we ain't got any experienced quarterbacks. Well, how are you going to get these quarterbacks any experience if you don't put them in the game?
That's a good point. I mean, maybe when it was 31-13 at the end, maybe so. I don't know how much good that's really going to do them, but at least it would be an opportunity to be out there.
11 points down, I didn't see any way we were going to get 12 points. Ain't no way.
Well, I mean, they had a chance to go down and score, and you could get the ball back. I mean, 11 points is two possessions.
Like I heard from Double D today, we always find a way to lose.
That has been a problem for Auburn, yes. They have done that.
Well, if that's the mindset, though, then why does it matter you play a freshman quarterback if you're going to find a way to lose anyway?
The people on the field are finding a way to lose, son.
I'm not a son. No, but I'm just telling you. I'm just telling you. Like, listen, look, I'm just answering the question. Like, if you get an opportunity, they would love to have an opportunity, but you also can't feel like, well, we're just throwing away the game. Like, you're still trying to win football games.
Well, it looks like I ain't getting anywhere with you.
What I mean, what? Well, I understand, but like, it wasn't like it was 38-0.
Right.
Does it have to be 38-0? Like I just said, even if he comes in for one series and down, he is getting some talent. He is getting some playing time.
No, I think there's an argument for playing Hank on that last drive when it's 31-13. Like, I think you're making – like, that is something I hadn't thought too much about it, Spector.
Again, like in that situation, I have no problem.
Yeah, no, I think there's something and the main argument for doing that would be the game's out of hand and Hank Brown deserves – you know, Hank, it would probably benefit Hank Brown to get a couple of snaps away from home in that situation. Like, I think it would have been totally understandable – especially because you're conceding that at that point, I think down 18 in the fourth.
Especially late in the fourth.
Look, absolutely. Auburn was up 11 in the fourth quarter with the ball. A week and a half, 2 weeks ago, and they lost. So like, you can still find a way to win that one. But no, down 18 maybe, and I think certainly when it's 31-13, like you could make the argument.
Yeah.
I wonder if Hugh Freeze wanted Peyton out there to get some, because they did throw to Malcolm a couple times. I think they threw to Perry a couple times. Maybe the thinking was leave the senior quarterback out there, but get the experience at the freshman receiver level. But no, I think there's an argument for getting a couple of snaps there.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Appreciate it, Spector. Good stuff.
334-321-1390.
I think we're going to get to Ed, but I think we lost
Ed.
Lose
Ed again. Yeah. All right. Well, we'll get to our bottom of the hour break. We'll start over again on the other side here on the Wednesday Drive.
Or 321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email thedrive@espnau.com.
Welcome back into the Wednesday Drive. Bill, Dan, Jason Caldwell from Auburn Undercover and right back to the Drive Hotline. And Ed. Hey, Ed.
Hey,
Ed.
Guys.
Hey, guy. What's going on?
Hey, Ed.
Hey, I have a hard time hearing y'all. I think y'all got me bugged or something, but it's the only number I call where I can't hardly hear y'all. I hope y'all can hear me.
Is this better, Ed? Can you hear us a little better now?
Yes, sir.
I changed the setting on the board. That should have improved things.
Yes, sir. It absolutely did. A couple of things that I was the number. Well, two things really. As far as like the is what's going to happen with NIL and all of that, Bill, you and I have talked about this several times, and I understand, the kids and giving empowerment and, doing this and that, but there comes a time, and this is about to get to the NFL type. It is to the NFL type level. It just don't have any guardrails yet. But if I was the coaches and everything, I would. And I know, Bill, you've told me 100 times I'm wrong about this, but it would be a 2-year contract when you signed, and you can leave after 2 weeks if you want to, but you can't play at least, you're going to have to sit out another year if you transfer and don't honor your contract. And I do believe it's got to be some kind of a semblance of some kind of order. But let me ask you this: the NFL right now, Devontae Smith is a if we go to the NFL type platform of drawing out, there's probably going to wind up being a players' union and all that kind of stuff and all this. What's to keep, let's just say Auburn right now so needing a quarterback, what's to keep in-season moves like that from happening if it's allowed in whatever they wind up drawing up?
Well, the one thing that at least right now is not allowed is movement during a season. And no, I've never had a problem.
I don't think anything right now, Bill, I don't think anything we're not talking about right now. We're talking about what's going to be drawn up in a year
sure.
or two.
And hey, I've never disagreed. As a matter of fact, as Jason was saying a while ago, I mean, that would be something. Multi-year deals, contracts, would make so much sense.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I mean, if a school wants to make it a three-year deal, but I mean, I would think 2 years, and like Jason said,
but
if you left before that time was up, you'd have to you'd either forfeit, or any money that you'd gotten in advance would have to come back.
I can also
see the same sort of thing that you were saying, that if you've got a two-year contract, hey, in most places, when you have a contract to work, you're not going to be able to work somewhere else until either that contract is up or it's voided by both sides.
Yeah, I think that's the thing for me. Like, I don't think there will be a case where you go, well, you can't transfer, you'll have to sit out. I think that ship has sailed. But I do think that if you say, okay, if you're leaving before your contract is over with, then you have to pay me what you're owed.
Right.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
We're
going to get back.
Whatever's left on that contract, you got to pay us that. Somebody's got to pay a buyout, just like they do for a coach or.
And I mean, I can see other schools wanting a player bad enough to be able to
check
that
in.
You see it with coaches.
But
now.
I think that's where it would head, and I think that's a distinct possibility, because something has to happen to protect both sides of this right now, mm-hmm. because right now it is totally one-sided.
Absolutely.
And you got to have some protection on the other side.
And it's hard to – I mean, it's like right now the state of Alabama or nationwide to get teachers. You know, it's hard, and it's going to be harder to get coaches if you give them a situation that is so – I wish they would have done away with one of the transfer portals, but they at least took a little bit of time off.
Yeah, they shrunk them down. Now they did say that now that as soon as a player's name is in the portal, they can sign, and that's something.
Yeah,
there won't be. Jason was talking with us here, you know, during the last break. There won't be visits. There'll be very unlikely now that there'll be visits. If the player has an idea where they want to go, they're going to enter the portal left side.
And we had already seen where, from a transfer portal perspective, you want to be the last visit. Well, in the portal perspective, you wanted to be the first visit.
You better be the first.
For right now, you better be the first phone call.
That is right. Appreciate the call, Ed.
One more thing.
You got?
Hello?
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, one more thing I was going to talk to y'all about is as far as Peyton Thorne, I wish the young man everything great in his life. But as far as, like, there is no excuse in my mind. And a lot of people were online giving up other Auburn fans heck for, you know, getting on him after four interceptions. Well, the way you don't do that is you don't keep him in the game when he's throwing interception. I don't know what's going on, but I don't know one single Auburn supporter or alumni or fan or whatever, booster, that last year thought that Peyton Thorne was going to be the answer. And Hugh Freeze has kind of hung his hat on that. And I just think it's just about that. You know, I wouldn't say this to Deuce Knight, you know, but why would you come? Walker White came in with the expectation, said, hey, maybe give somebody a chance. Give them a chance. At least they can't do much worse than what Peyton Thorne has done. I mean, for goodness sake, he is beyond. He is so scared once the game gets underway, he's tripping over his own feet. War Eagle, guys.
All right, Ed.
I'm glad Ed said that, because I want Jason to respond to the – like Auburn, it's urgent right now that Auburn make a move to play one of the other quarterbacks, whether it's Hank or whether it's Walker, and sort of like where you, because I guess like you've seen more of Hank and Walker than I have, and you know, I mean, like you would understand sort of what Auburn had with these guys coming in, and what what Auburn would stand to gain or lose by making a switch from Peyton Thorne to somebody else right now. And I'm just sort of like your thoughts on whether that's a consideration sort of internally and why or why not.
Yeah, I think, you know, there's nobody that watches these guys more than the coaches. And we've said it all along, a long time. Coaches don't play guys that they don't think are the best. Like, if there's a reason why Peyton Thorne's playing is because they feel like he gives them the best chance to win. Does that mean the other guys can't play? No, it doesn't. But we saw a little bit of Hank Brown. And, you know, he's like, well, what they did with Hank Brown is what they were just talking, what he wanted to do with Peyton Thorne, which is, well, when he threw an interception, take him out of the game. Well, they did that because Hank Brown threw a bunch of them in the first half against Arkansas. Does that mean he can't be the guy? No. And it's the same thing I've talked about next year. People are like, well, they're going to go get a transfer guy. Deuce Knight's coming in. But it doesn't mean that the quarterback's not on the – you're allowed to get better. And sometimes that happens with very little playing experience. Guys just – they improve by working, practicing, doing all those things, which is what these guys are having to do now. The quarterback's a competition, and only one guy can play. It's not like even offensive line, you normally don't play a bunch of guys. But you think about wide receiver, you think about other positions where you're rotating guys. By the time that quarterback, normally those guys don't get a bunch of playing time
until
it's
the guy.
Their time.
That's right.
And so will their time come down the stretch this year? Yeah, but I don't think it's now because you got six games left, and I think we saw last weekend you can win all six of those games. Now, you could probably lose five of them too.
Yeah, that's true.
But you're still sitting here going, look, there's a lot of football left to play. If you get down the road and it hasn't changed, then will I be surprised if we don't see somebody else? I think we'll see somebody else, but I don't think it's now.
So, something Ed said briefly, like I think Ed made a point about the unpopularity of the decision to stick with Peyton Thorne back in December, and I certainly remember coming out of the bowl game, like that was a polarizing thing in the Auburn fan base. One of the first remarks, either post bowl game or signing day, or it was the first day of spring practice, where like Hugh Freeze spent a lot of his remarks to the media talking about the decision to stick with Peyton Thorne and build the offense around Peyton Thorne in year two instead of going shopping in the portal. I think it's totally fair criticism of Hugh Freeze to say that may have been a misjudgment and he should have more seriously tried to bring in a proven, you know, try to reboot with a more proven quarterback from outside the program in year two. To me, that's a criticism I understand a lot more than somebody else on this team should be playing quarterback right now instead of Peyton Thorne, because I do not think that things would be better with Hank in the game. I do not think Hank Walker didn't even travel to Athens, as I understand it. Like and no one talks about Holden Gurner.
Yeah.
So it's like, I understand Hugh should have brought somebody else in from outside. I don't understand Hugh should make the change right now from Peyton Thorne to Hank Brown based on what I've seen from both guys.
Here's the question. I mean, obviously, there's a lot of folks in the country that are going, man, you probably could have gotten Diego Pavia pretty cheap, and how would that have changed things?
He followed his offense coordinator.
Yes.
I think it's important to remember that, too.
But I think, you know, you're like, hey, you can get a guy like that, yes. Most everybody else would have been people that would have cost you a significant amount of money. What don't you have on this roster if you had done that? Well, you don't have Keandre Lambert-Smith, who's been your best player.
He's probably been better than I think anybody had thought he would be.
I don't know that you would have had what you needed to have to go get him. Do you have potentially a couple of those other guys? I don't know that you do.
May not have, Philip Bleedy or somebody like that.
Who knows? You may not have one of your high school guys because you would have had to go get that guy in December.
That is true.
So, I mean, all of it impacts. That's the part of it now where if you have unlimited funds, Auburn has a different quarterback, in my opinion. But you don't have unlimited funds and you're going, do we go get somebody that we know is 100% better, or do we feel like it's a very similar situation? That's the part that you have to judge right now.
We'll get one more call before our final break of hour number one. John is up next. Hey, John.
Hey, guys. I had a quick question for Jason and everybody. Just thinking about the situation at Alabama with Malachi Moore. As much as I like to see that program struggle, that's a difficult position to me that Kalen DeBoer's in, where it's not a legal ramification with possibly suspending one of your team captains. it's for, you know, on the field, you know, behavior, but NIL's already paid. And so without, I don't know if there's an avenue where if you suspend them, I mean, the check's already cashed. I mean, how is that dealt with, or how do coaches deal with situations like that in this NIL era?
That's a good question. I don't know. I mean, that you hear coaches say you still got to coach them hard. But in this day and age, especially when it's not somebody you recruited, that makes it even more difficult because it's not your guy. It's a guy you've known for a couple of months. I didn't think it's bad to say this. I didn't think kicking the football and doing other things was nearly as bad.
Pitching the fit, throwing his mouthpiece, and then not coming out.
That was the part for me.
That is what would get a player suspended. Well, when a player says no, I'm not coming out of the game.
The worst thing he did though is potentially giving Pavia a head injury on the post game little thing thereafter. Like the thing that actually could have injured.
The thing that
could have actually injured another player. Yeah. Now the other stuff is a terrible. You know, the optics of everything else he did. Are
optics. I mean, when you're the head coach or you're the defensive coordinator and you're calling a player, you're taking a player out, and he says no. Then you've got
to
do something.
To answer the question, I don't know. I don't know how. Yep. I think it has to be individual, knowing who the kid is, knowing what it meant. I think, and knowing Malachi Moore some, I do know him some from the recruiting process, I think it was as much frustration as anything, but
man,
you have to deal with that better, and how you handle it, I don't know. I mean, you're right. It's difficult because, you know, that's what you're talking about is like paying money. These guys, all you go, hey, here you go. This is one of your guys, and all of a sudden you cut him loose. I mean, that'd be pretty tough.
All right, we need to get to our final break. We'll get as many calls in as we can when we come back here on the Wednesday Drive.
Looking for a place where legends and lattes collide?
Call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email thedrive@espnau.com.
Welcome back into the drive. Final couple of minutes. Who do we have, Dan?
We got Bill on the hanging on. What's up, Bill?
I was listening the last couple of minutes, and I remember they were talking about the putting a backup quarterback in for Peyton Thorne. I don't think that would have made any difference. For one thing, I think these coaches realize that probably next year's quarterback's probably not on this roster. Might be in high school, might be somewhere else. We, with exception of 4th-and-1, a couple of small things, we played about as well as we could play Saturday against a team of Georgia's caliber. I'm not saying I'm satisfied with, runner-up.
Oh, no, no moral victories, I don't think, right now.
Right. But at the same time, let's be realistic. They're a lot better. They're a pretty good team.
They are. And they're very talented.
You're not 2-4 because of how you played against Georgia. You know what I mean?
Like, no, that's exactly right.
We were right there. We were right there.
Auburn's got to figure ways to finish. You know, that's the thing right now.
And it's like Brian said a day or two before. I mean, we seem to wait to the most inopportune time to fall apart. And having watched Auburn football a long time, I thought the kids gave a great effort Saturday, and with exception of the 4th-and-1 and a few other things. They're getting better. It's just not happening right now. So we have to persevere, right?
Yeah. I mean, I completely agree.
Good stuff, Bill.
I thought it was, and I wrote this Monday, but I talked to some folks I know at Georgia who cover Georgia recruiting,
mm-hmm.
and all of them were like, this is a much better Auburn team. Now, there's still holes, but they're starting to see, that's a more talented roster than we've seen from an Auburn team in the past. And it showed up. I mean, like, what about 2009 the last time Auburn had that many yards in Athens?
Yeah.
And you didn't turn it over, but you didn't create any turnovers. Mm-hmm. That's the thing. You look at that game and you go, man, if you create a turnover or two, even though you made those couple of mistakes, you get a couple of extra possessions, then you might have a chance to win that game. But you can't play straight up against Georgia.
Not yet.
And expect to win a game like that. You're just not there yet.
Jason, we're just about out of time here for hour number one. I mean, talk about what you guys have got going on here during the the open date and you know how they can keep up with everything.
Yeah, we talked a lot of football today. I did a story today on Miles Kelly, a basketball, I think, Tahad Pettiford from Nathan tomorrow. So we did a couple of basketball interviews yesterday, watched a little practice, went out to baseball today. They're actually going to have a squad game in the morning at like 11:30, 11:45 before they leave for Pensacola. They'll play Florida State Saturday in a 14-inning one game, but they're kind of going to split it up
right.
and play kind of two sevens. So we got some baseball stuff on, obviously a lot of football. Opelika Enterprise Friday night, so I'll get a home game Friday night, so it should be good.
Yeah, that's great. Always great to have you in here, Jason. Enjoy the open date,
yeah.
even though there's plenty going on.
Yeah, looking forward to it. Like I said, a whole lot of things going on. So, like I said, trying to get some basketball and baseball done mm-hmm. this week with the bye week and looking forward to that. And then obviously a lot of high school football, and then should be a good viewing Saturday.
Sounds good. We will we'll talk to you later. Look forward to seeing you again next week.
Absolutely. Thanks, guys.
All right, we are halfway done here on the Wednesday Drive. Love for you to join in the second hour of the show.
Live from Auburn, the sports capital of Alabama, this is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome into hour number two of the Wednesday Drive. Hope everybody doing well on this hump day. Our thanks to Jason Caldwell from Auburn Undercover, who was with us in hour number one. Hope you had a chance to hear JC. If you missed any of him being on the show or any of our shows or any of the shows and broadcasts here on ESPN 106.7, you can check them out on the podcast.
That's right. Podcasts of The Drive available wherever you get your favorite podcast. Check out Spotify, Apple, just search for The Drive with Bill Cameron, or go to ESPNAU.com and use the Podcast Center. All of that presented by our friends at Southeastern Industrial Contractors.
Hour number two of The Drive brought to you by the good folks at the Orthopedic Clinic, East Alabama's go-to center for orthopedic care with locations in Auburn and Opelika, on the web at orthoclinic.com. And we're going to go ahead and get to the Drive Hotline, sponsored by Skybar. You can get in line behind Brett, 334-321-1390. Hey, Brett.
You said Auburn's got to learn to finish games, but I don't know how that's going to happen if you don't have the guy at the helm who can consistently make plays, especially in crunch time.
Yeah, well, you've got to go with the best one that you have and try to figure if there is a way that you can finish it.
I agree with that, yeah. I'm not saying we should change quarterbacks, but, you know, I just haven't seen him make plays in crunch time in almost, well, 1.5 years.
I think accusing Peyton of, like, I think there are a couple of back-breaking mistakes that have turned winnable games into, I think it's a fair criticism. I also think that, and maybe it's the reason why people accuse me of going easy on Peyton. Like, to me, it sometimes feels like it lets Hugh Freeze and the play calling off the hook. You know what I mean? And since the Cal game, and certainly since Peyton went back in against Arkansas, I've been more upset about the play calling than I have been Peyton's performance. Like, the Cal game, it feels like Peyton's missing guys and Auburn beats a team, or Auburn loses a game at home to a team they should have beaten. I think since Arkansas, like, I look at Oklahoma where I mean, Peyton's only pick is the one late after Auburn is already, that's Auburn shouldn't be throwing in that situation anyway. Like, that's a game that should have been salted away already. And then and Georgia, yeah, it was going to take a no-hitter, you know, it felt like, from the Auburn offense to win that one. I get certainly the mistakes have been crushing in the year and a half, but lately I'm a little more disappointed in the offensive philosophy, Brett.
There is some of that, but no matter what play you call, you got to execute. I mean, it doesn't matter. I mean, you know, the Arkansas game before he threw the interception, heck, he would have had another one if the pass had been a good pass, because it went behind our receiver and the guy was standing right there. I mean, Do you remember? It was first down when, you know, after the long run, I believe it was.
Oh, it got balanced out. It got balanced out, right? Because he throws one that probably should have been an interception, and then he throws the one that goes off a cam and up in the air and gets actually intercepted,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Like it was
anyway, Dan, let's talk about things that are much more possible.
This I'll tell you, this postseason, this baseball postseason, and I say that as someone whose team is facing elimination tonight, this baseball postseason has been awesome so far. The Alonzo homer is one of the great, like, that's one of the moments you hope, like, aside from Brewers fans, you know,
they're not thrilled with that. How about Tigers fans after they get a bullpen combined shutout today to go up 2-1? They're a game away from playing in the ALCS. That's amazing.
I was looking up a few things, Dan, during the break. However you pronounce the guy's Cease, the pitcher for the Padres. Yeah. Dodgers have beaten him twice in the last 14 days. So if we can hold them down just a little bit, I believe we got it, and then I think we're going to take the game five.
Oh, yeah. If you win game four, I feel sure that the Dodgers win game five.
Darvish did pitch well earlier in the season against the Dodgers. That would be the Padres starter in game five.
I just feel that's a Padres thing, though. If they lose this one, they're not.
Cease on short rest is an aggressive move by the Padres tonight to close this thing out.
Especially, I mean, you're talking a bullpen game from the Dodgers. I'd be really tempted if I were the Padres to go with a bullpen game and have Cease and Darvish, you know, at full rest for game five if you need them.
Well. Tell me what you think, Dan.
I'm apprehensive about a bullpen game on the road in this situation, but it would be very Padres to blow this series. With all due respect to Padres fans, if there are any listening, it would be very Padres to blow this series. So I got to see them. It's just, you know, just like Auburn's offense, right? I got to see them close it. I got to see them close the deal, close it out before I'm totally. It's a monster movie. Don't write off the Dodgers till the series is over.
That's right. I'm with you. All right. Y'all have a great evening.
All right, Brett. Good hearing from you. 334-321-1390. That is the Drive Hotline sponsored by Skybar. And let's get back to the phone. Tex is next.
What's up, Tex?
Hey, guys. I'm not going to yell at either one of y'all today. I don't think there's any reason to get upset with your opinion. Especially
when it's an opinion that I might not even disagree with. It's funny when I'm told exactly. I have disagreed with something that I don't recall ever doing. But
you're right, son. Anyway, so I just have to tell you, though, that lady you got answering the telephone has a squeaky voice.
Well, I'll pass that along to management.
You're welcome, Dan. Anyway, so... I just don't understand. I understand being upset, but being so worked up to the point where you can get angry about a discussion about sports is difficult for me to rationalize in my mind. So I'm going to move on off of all of that. Interesting thing that came out today, the proposition or the discussion about going to 70 teams in the Super Conference. Bill, you and I have had that conversation many a time, and the money is flowing in that direction.
Hey, it's really funny. Go ahead.
Yeah, and if you think NIL is bad now, just wait.
Yeah, what's funny to watch in this is you've got now different groups seeing the dollar signs, and they want to administer it. You know, they want to be the administrators of this 70-team league.
The only thing I'm skeptical about in that situation, Tex, is I think that some of the power players in, like, some of the biggest fish in college football as far as the biggest programs out there, I don't think they look at the Super League and say it needs 70 teams. I think they would look at a Super League.
Well, I think the SEC and the Big Ten look and say, we've got all we need between these two leagues of 36.
Yeah, I think, you know, especially when you talk about splitting the pie 70 ways,
right.
I think there are some programs that would say, no, it doesn't need 70. That number should be closer to 30 than 70.
Oh, yeah. Did you see how they were talking about splitting the money? They were going to, the top 16 teams would get a good bit more than the SEC and Big 10 now distribute. Teams like 17 to 39 would get about what the Big Ten and SEC split, and then the teams from 40 to 70 would get less, about what the Big 12 and the ACC are getting. So, you know,
well, it's been my opinion all along it was going to be 60, but I also think in that distribution, it's just math. A smaller percentage of a way bigger number is a bigger number in real dollars.
Mm-hmm.
So the plan I think they're looking at, even though the percentages might be slightly different, I think as that continues to grow, that number gets to be a bigger number. And I think the money's about to get really out of control, wow, almost as if it's owners.
What?
And I don't think they'll pattern after the NFL. I think they're going to be closer to 60 than they will be 32. But it's really interesting to see how it's progressed so quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And that has been talked about for 15 years.
Now
all of a sudden, all of us on out front. So.
Someone pointed out to me, Tex, because along the lines of what you're talking about, someone pointed out that a lot of the media deals that currently exist were negotiated before the prospect of revenue sharing with the student athletes became as real as it has in the last 5 years. And so something drastic that increases the revenue coming into programs, because they're going to have to start giving a considerable portion of that revenue to the, I mean, it's expected that maybe fall 25, we're in a revenue sharing environment in college athletics. I could see why schools are looking at their budgets right now and saying, wait, we're going to have to start giving what percentage of this to the student athletes, mm-hmm, as revenue directly, yeah, and
20 plus million per team per year, per school per year. The other thing, mm-hmm, that I've heard here over the last couple of days is, you know, the SEC and Big Ten are meeting, or are they going? I guess tomorrow, I think, is when they're having a meeting, and there are some rumblings that yeah, they're not crazy about these other people wanting to come in and administer a 70 team super league when they feel like they both have super leagues right now, mm-hmm, with what is looks like could happen at any time with the ACC. I think the SEC and Big Ten are looking at ways of doing themselves, adding to their super leagues from the ACC and maybe the Big 12 and getting to whatever, mm-hmm, you know, whatever they want to get, 48, 60, yeah, whatever, something like,
yep,
that.
I could see that easily. And when that happens, it's going to be basically the Collegiate Football Association or,
yep,
something along that.
Mm-hmm.
Completely done away with the NCAA, and you put together a board with equal representation across, and you manage the money. So the other thing is look, these coaches that we have won a lot more football games, even if they lose every game they coach at Auburn from now on. They've won way more football games than any of us making these phone calls to them have won. Excuse me. So they're trying. They're trying. I can't believe they're not trying to win.
No.
And I think they're playing the best players that they. I've never met a coach that didn't put who they thought the best player was on the field ever at any level.
Yeah, because I don't know many coaches who don't want to win.
I do understand, like, the closer you get to the end of the season, starting to advocate for, hey, you know, let's explore what else is on the depth chart, and
right,
look at things for, like, I guess
when you really can't achieve any of your goals and that is gone, and then it is nothing but, all right, let's see what we have for the future. But Auburn's, mm-hmm, not to that point yet.
Yeah, and so I say this all the time. I've lived away from Auburn since the day my wife graduated. We've never been able to live in the town full-time. Me going back to Auburn is way more than whether the football, the baseball team, or the basketball team wins. It's getting to see the people and being around the people. And I'm getting a little worried that we got some of these – even around us in the stadium, you have people that complain the minute the ball snapped the first time. Mm-hmm. And it's changed so much. I guess it may have something to do with what happened or had been happening for years, 119 miles north of us. I don't know. But, you know, I'm not giving up on them. They're going to win again. They just may not win when everybody wants them to. And I personally think we got the right guy. I think, in Coach Dan. I don't know about – I don't know how you – play execution is as important as the play calling. So it's hard to differentiate those two things. When
yeah,
you
a lot of times it is.
Oh,
right.
Certainly. No, I would look at like the only argument. I mean, besides the eyeball test text, like the argument for you know recalibrating the thing to give it to the running backs more is just. I mean, when you're seeing a discrepancy between a team and where they rank in yards per carry and yards per attempt, yards per carry and yards per game. You feel like, oh man, if you're really excelling per attempt, maybe lean on that more.
Yeah, but also you may have to look and see that maybe defenses aren't allowing us to lean on it a little bit more.
There's a million
putting something
yeah.
in front of you that makes you change. So, all right. And by the way, hey, just one other quick thing. This might be one of the most exciting beginning to. Major League Baseball playoffs in a while. This postseason has been pretty crazy.
It really has.
It's not slowing down either.
Yeah, it's fun to watch. So anyway, all right, guys, we'll talk to you soon.
All right, Tex, appreciate the call.
No, I appreciate that, and he's right. Like it's not because you got to avoid simple answers, right? Like that's the thing, and it's so easy to say run the ball more or play the backup quarterback or
right.
Or play, you know, bench both tackles and play guys who have never played before. Like it's, I mean, you understand. Like it's you don't factor when you say one of those things.
Well,
you don't factor in all of the other decisions that go into well, why or why not could that work?
The stat that Jason mentioned earlier, I had not really gone back and looked and thought about that. He pointed out that. Peyton Thorne threw 13 passes. 13 of his 27 passes came in the fourth quarter. So that means up until then, the run-pass ratio was a lot different than the way it ended up.
Oh, when Jarquez breaks the run, I think to cut it to does that cut it to 10? Does that cut it to
14-10?
That makes it 14-10. I think when Jarquez breaks the run, it's Auburn has even leaned on the run
more than
they throw.
So that makes sense, and that's something a lot of times you know folks don't realize. It's like when you get down by a couple of scores, the way Auburn was there in the fourth quarter, especially after. I mean, once Georgia's up 28-10, why are you running? Why are you running when you're down 18? In the fourth quarter,
sure, and as Spector said in the last hour, like there's an argument for playing seldom used guys at that point because it's so unlikely. I don't know what kind of
you have to reach that point of all right, we don't have a chance if it's when was Georgia's score to make it 28-10?
Well, I think Auburn gets the ball back with about a minute 50 left.
But the score to make it 28-10.
Oh, 28-10.
Came with 12 and a half minutes to go. That's a little early to just toss in a towel and go, all right, we're down 28-10 with 12 and a half minutes to go. You're down 18. But when Auburn
– maybe give the score – yeah, give the starters one more drive to see if
they
can score.
And they did. They used 5 minutes and went down and kicked a field goal. Which was a little surprising to me. I mean, I guess you're thinking we're going to cut it to two scores because it's a three-score game when it's 18.
I described the field goal as hollow on the Observer podcast.
I mean, Auburn had put together a pretty good drive, but you needed a touchdown.
Yeah, and I get worrying about how the final score plays and things like that and, you know, getting points where you can. I know it was 4th and 8, so it's probably a low percentage.
It is. It's tough.
Touchdown conversion.
But, I mean,
there.
You're down 18. I'd probably go for it.
Yeah, I'd have liked to toss in the end zone.
You're concerned about pass pro. You're concerned about pass blocking because by that time Georgia was, they were teeing off and coming. And then the last time Auburn got the ball back, there was a minute 50. And absolutely, I have no problem then. You're down 31-13 after that field goal. It's like, no, then you can put anybody. I would say reward the guys that worked and earned a spot on the travel roster if you can.
No, I think there's, I mean, and we had a call in the first hour sort of advocating for something along those lines, and I think there's a lot to it. I don't know, and I guess one of the benefits there too is you could have somebody who makes a play or two that provides them an argument for more playing time in the future when you get to that point. But I think Hugh Freeze, and I I do think there were some guys. I mean, you had more freshman receivers on the field on that last drive than you would have had, I think, in the rest of the game. I think Perry and
Perry had a couple of targets.
Yeah, Perry and Malcolm play it more, so they did try to get some youth in elsewhere, but they didn't make the switch on at quarterback or on the line.
We'll get to our first break of hour number two. Love for you to join in, 334-321-1390. A little programming note for you. No Tiger Take this week, since Auburn has the open date. Players' schedules are a little different, so we have an open week from Tiger Takes as well.
Loaded slate of college football this weekend, even though Auburn is on the bye. You've got a lot of really interesting games in the conference and around the country. So we'll probably talk about that a little bit more now that we're rounding the corner from Saturday's game into what's going on this weekend.
Yeah, and there's also college football tonight. I mean, yesterday we were talking about it. 50-something consecutive days of football tonight. Jacksonville State hosting New Mexico State. The New Mexico State without the guys that were such a thorn in Auburn and other sides for the past couple of years.
Yeah, so quiet.
That one's coming up tonight at Jack State.
It's a quiet 1-4 start for New Mexico State. They have struggled to replace some of the guys that helped them win some games, including the game at Jordan-Hare Stadium last year. Tonight you have in Alabama the Jacksonville State game, and then Tuesday night is one of the odd weeknight games during this stretch of football. Tuesday night is Troy at South Alabama. So this coming Tuesday. So some of these odd these odd weeknight games we're happy to accommodate here in the state of Alabama.
All right, we'll get to that first break. Come on in and join us here on the Wednesday Drive.
There's nothing better than football in the South, except when you score.
Welcome back into the drive here on this Wednesday afternoon. Again, a reminder: no Tiger Takes. So phone lines are open till the end of the show.
Yeah, interesting stuff from Jason Caldwell. He mentioned that really, even though the box score against Georgia for Auburn looked, looked as pass happy as Auburn had been in other games this season, a lot of those passes came in the fourth quarter when Auburn was trailing by multiple scores, and it had been a much more run heavy approach.
It really had
first 2.5 quarters or so of the game. Although Auburn also, it points to the fact that Auburn had struggled to be on the field as an offense.
Auburn had only run 39 plays going to the fourth quarter. 39 plays in the first three quarters.
That's astonishing.
Yeah.
But of those 39.
Just 13 passes.
Yeah, just 13 passes. I mean, a more conservative approach.
Although
the box score obscures the fact that going up, really up until Auburn turns it over on that turnover on downs on the first play of the fourth quarter, which I guess that would qualify. There's a run. Yeah, we were talking about some runs in the fourth. But like from that run on, it's Auburn throws the ball far more than they had in the game to that point. Maybe you see a more run heavy approach in the next 5-6 games for Auburn based on what they had tried to do.
And did, as you pointed out on Auburn's during the break, but remember Auburn's touchdown drive there in the second half to cut it to 14-10 was all on the ground.
That's right. Auburn starts the second half with six straight runs, and I think six straight called runs.
Maybe all the people that are saying that, Hugh Freeze is going, look at what we did.
Well, that's
what we were doing in the second half.
Maybe one of the thorn runs is a scramble. I forget if one of those was a called pass play.
There were definitely a couple of called Peyton runs.
But it's a six-play touchdown drive with three Jarquez runs and three Peyton runs, culminating with the Jarquez 38-yard touchdown. Like that's the drive to start the second half for Auburn. And I wonder if and doing that against Georgia, is different than doing that against Missouri or Kentucky. Like doing the challenge of doing something like that against a Georgia defense.
Definitely different than doing it against Missouri. Kentucky's pretty salty.
No, you're right. Kentucky is stout. They've been, you know, pretty, I mean, that's a Stoops trademark, is a defense, especially against the run, that tries to make, you know, they want to put pressure on you to get precision passes. But no, I think there is there are some things where if you dig a little bit deeper, again, you know, you wonder if it's like drilling for oil, right? Like you haven't struck the oil yet.
No, we may have hit shale.
Will you? Like,
yeah.
Like is there the oil?
It's there. Yeah. Sometimes it's not.
Sometimes it's not
That's
there.
Right.
But there also could, you know, there could be gold in them there hills, Bill. Like, you know, it could very well happen.
You know, and the fact that Auburn is not playing this week and getting that very, I think they really need the open date now. There's some interesting ball games. You mentioned this in the first hour. Some interesting ball games around the country, but especially here in the SEC this week. Teams that have lost surprisingly. I mean, you've got to look at Alabama, Tennessee, and Ole Miss. Those teams losing games completely unexpected here over the last couple of weeks have got some interesting matchups this week.
Ole Miss, LSU feels like
it. That is a big, big ball game.
It feels huge.
And Ole Miss is a 3.5-point favorite last time I looked.
Winner of that game feels like a playoff team.
And it's in Baton Rouge.
Based on what they've got the rest of the season. Now, they could drop an upset or two. Winner of that game feels like they've got a great shot at the playoff.
I agree.
Because Ole Miss can win that game, lose to Georgia, and if they're sitting there at 10-2 with a win in Baton Rouge.
But if they lose this one, I think if Ole Miss loses this one, then it's going to be a very disappointing season for them with two losses and still – And still
it turns Georgia into a
Oklahoma. They've got to go to Arkansas too. Yep. They lose this one, their next three ball games. Look at this 4-game stretch for Ole Miss. At LSU, they get an open date. Oklahoma, at Arkansas, Georgia. That looks a lot tougher because of what Arkansas has done, and now the fact that Ole Miss lost to Kentucky.
That's 4-1 LSU, 4-1 Oklahoma, 4-2 Arkansas, and 4-1 Georgia.
Right.
That's a pretty good stretch of teams that Ole Miss is about to play. If they are, I mean, you go 4-0 in that run. Well, if you're
Ole
Miss, I mean, they round the corner of that. They got Florida and Mississippi State to finish the season. They could probably lose one. I think a 10-2 Ole Miss team, if they go 3-1 in this stretch, this is why they had to beat Kentucky, because we could be saying Ole Miss could lose to LSU and Georgia, and at 10-2, you would be sort of wondering who the best team they've beaten is, but at 10-2 as an SEC team, they'd be flirting with the SEC championship game and maybe the college football playoff. Having lost to Kentucky, 9-3 with losses to LSU and Georgia would be a problem, because not only are you dealing with the fact that you're 9-3,
but who did you beat?
I mean, Oklahoma at home would be your would be your signature victory, and you wouldn't really have another one among teams that are of that caliber. So this is a Ole Miss has to beat either LSU or Georgia to make the playoff. Like that feels
I agree.
Like,
I agree.
Know, Ole Miss has to beat one of those two teams to make the playoff. LSU's
next four are interesting too. I mean, after Ole Miss, they go to Fayetteville and to College Station before they host Alabama. Man, that's a pretty tough 4-game stretch.
A loss here for LSU means they would need to go 3-0 in their next three to make the playoff.
And you know, just a few weeks ago, it looked like, well, you know, what's Arkansas? What's Texas A&M? They both look a lot better now, don't they? Just after this past weekend.
Yeah, one of you, if you imagine like the college football playoff as like a bus with 12 seats, like the winner of LSU Ole Miss feels like they got a seat on the bus, and the loser of that game is like one of the people chasing the bus, trying to get it to slow down or something. You've got work to do to get yourself.
You've
got
to catch up.
Yeah, you got work to do.
Yep. We'd love to hear from you, 334-321-1390. We'll get to our bottom of the hour break. Still plenty of time for you to join in here on the Wednesday Drive.
Give a prayer to Florida.
Oh, absolutely. Central Florida. Yeah. I mean, what a mess.
No, I lived in St. Pete for a couple of years growing up, Jerry, and I'm actually my childhood home there on Harbor Isle is in evacuation zone A. It's a couple miles from Tropicana Field there and in the canals, and it's just, yeah, I mean, that's one of the metropolitan areas most vulnerable to a really bad storm, a really bad hurricane, and it seems like, yeah, Tampa Bay, the greater Tampa area into Central Florida is really going to be impacted the next day or two.
Yeah, all we can do is pray.
Oh yeah, no question. Yeah. I mean, they're saying, you know, this is a catastrophic storm and the most powerful storm to hit the Tampa area in at least 100 years.
Yeah, the mayor of Tampa is a lifelong resident of the area, and she's never, you know, she's warning people because there are a lot of people who have moved to Tampa recently. You know, that area has exploded in residency and, you know, population in the last 20 years or so, the greater Central Florida area. And I think a lot of people have not seen, that was the concern with the Fort Myers storm last year. Was it Irma? But the storm that, yeah, impacted Fort Myers, you had a lot of people who were new to Florida and had never really seen anything like that before. And I think a lot of people, even lifelong residents of the area, have never seen anything like Milton.
I'm seeing Orlando is expecting 15 inches of rain.
Yeah, it places inland. Like, Florida has so many rivers and swamps and low-lying areas that it's not just, you often think about the coast when you think about storm surge, and it's not like this isn't
15-foot storm surge is that's almost, I mean,
it's a wall of water.
It is.
I mean, it's a wall of water. It's catastrophic damage.
It's a one-story building of water.
And all that water in the Tampa Bay has to go somewhere, and then the further you get inland, you get the rivers and the lakes and the canals, and that water's got to go somewhere, and it's just hopefully folks have heeded the warnings of emergency personnel, and hopefully people will be able to get in there after the storm has passed through and you reestablish water and power. And as always, Bill, the folks, the linemen, right? The folks in there fixing.
Yeah. No kidding.
Fixing. I mean, have you seen the pictures of Tropicana Field?
No,
so
I have not.
So they're using Tropicana Field as a staging area for a lot of the people that are going to have to go to work after the storm is done. So they've got, you know, cots, you know, hundreds of cots lined up on the field right now where linemen.
Golly, I hope it's able to be used.
This thing was built. This thing was built with that in mind. But it's okay. Still like a, I mean, that was if you remember with Katrina, the roof of the Superdome, mm-hmm. You know, failing in that situation. I think that was one of the arguments for Tropicana Field being an emergency center, but yeah, it's a staging area for a lot of the folks that are going to have to go in there and get to work once the storm is done. Appreciate it, Ed. Appreciate it. Good stuff from our buddy Jerry. Yeah, yeah. Great stuff there, Jerry.
Yeah, good hearing from you. 334-321-1390. We were talking about games around the SEC, a couple of interesting. One that is a whole lot more interesting than anybody had thought is going to be the Kentucky-Vandy game. I mean, who thought this is? I mean, this is a very interesting ball game. You got to wonder, can Vandy get their heads out of the clouds after the win over Alabama this past week? I mean, because they have to they have to travel to Lexington this weekend.
This has to be one of the more eagerly anticipated Vanderbilt games in years because it's the first game after they pull off an upset like the one they pulled off.
It's Kentucky's first game after they beat Ole Miss, but they've had an open date.
It's Kentucky's first game. I mean, these are two teams that just beat top 10 teams.
Five teams, right?
Yeah, in shocking upsets, you know, both of them. So, I want to see how I want to see how Vanderbilt looks in the first game after an upset like that because this is a team. And with Vandy, it's not as though Vandy played terrible football in the other games and then came alive against Alabama.
Vandy could be unbeaten.
Vandy could be unbeaten. The Georgia State game was decided at the buzzer. The Missouri game went to overtime. Went to double overtime. I think it's a and the Virginia Tech game that they won to start the season, which went to overtime as well. Vandy was way up in that one, right. and then it got interesting late. So I think this is a Vandy team that, you know, I think they may still have folks thinking that was a fluke. How legitimate are they? And you know, this is a way for Vanderbilt to show it's more than just a one game phenomenon.
And for Kentucky, I'm sure that this was quite the wake up call after the open date. I mean, a lot of Kentucky fans after the Ole Miss game were saying, "Well, that's a good thing that we don't really play anybody for a few weeks until we go to Knoxville." But no, they've got Vandy this week. I mean, they surely wouldn't be looking ahead, I wouldn't think, to Florida or Auburn right now after what Vandy did this past week.
No, so I want to see how that one looks. I'm a little surprised Kentucky is the solid favorite.
They are a solid
favorite. We played that. I think we played that one on the air, didn't we? Where we guessed the line. It was. I mean, we were all.
Yeah, I was thinking single digits for sure, and I was doing, you know, under five, and it's what, 14
multi touchdowns. Yeah, for that one. So can Oklahoma throw a wrench into the Texas offense and keep that game close?
It doesn't seem like it. But boy, they have owned the series against Texas. I mean, they just beat them last year. So I don't know. I mean, I would expect Texas, but number one hasn't been kind to SEC teams so far this year.
No, I would imagine it's going to take an outstanding. It's going to be like Arkansas. It's going to take a Herculean performance by the Oklahoma defense to keep this game. Like if Oklahoma's got a shot, it's because the winning team has 17 points.
And isn't Quinn Ewers supposed to be back?
And I think Quinn Ewers is supposed to play, but Quinn Ewers coming back after a layoff, Oklahoma's not necessarily the defense you want to see in that situation because they're aggressive and they're tough at every level. And Brent Venables is one of the smarter defensive minds out there in the sport. I would think it's a Texas win, maybe closer than the multiple touchdowns that Texas is favored
by. I think so too, and I also think that there are a lot of points that Alabama's given to South Carolina. It'll be really interesting to see how they respond to that shocking loss this past week in Nashville.
I was finally right about a South Carolina game because I had two straight where I thought they were just going to look terrible in Lexington and Kentucky was clearly going to be the better football team. And then I thought LSU was going to go there and cream South Carolina. And maybe it's because I watched the Old Dominion game opening day. I was sitting there next to you at the Auburn game, watching South Carolina Old Dominion. I can't shake that. Unlike Auburn, I think South Carolina's got it's not a reshuffle and just, you know, make minor changes and you could have big breakthroughs. I think they've got they've got talent problems at critical positions. Doesn't feel like they can throw the ball.
They're so much better with Lenora Sellers, though.
They're so much better with, but I don't know.
I don't know if it's anywhere near good enough.
Yeah, no, I think that both things can be true. Like, yes, the offense is worse when Ashford's out there, but I don't know how good it is with Sellers. It just feels like passing is an adventure every time South Carolina tries it, and that's a tough way to live.
That it is in the SEC. And Alabama is such a big play offense that it's. You can see how they could strike three times, you know, just sometime during the game, and that gives them that 20-something point victory.
I don't know how many more conference wins there are on the South Carolina schedule. Like I would look and say, at Alabama.
No, you're right. You're absolutely right. I mean, at Alabama, at Oklahoma, Texas A&M, at Vandy, Missouri.
I don't know if I like South Carolina in any of those games. I mean, even going to Vandy.
But then they played better than I thought they would up to this point.
They did, and they go to Clemson to cap that off. I think Clemson's
playing better.
I think Shane Beamer's got to pull this thing out of a tailspin, or we could be talking about a new coach South Carolina next year.
Yeah, that's crazy. I mean, after that shocking destroy, you know, just when they just destroyed Kentucky, but they may be a team that is struggling, looking for that second conference win.
Yeah, and I mean if they play the way we sort of fear they could play in this stretch, it's going to be tough to really advocate. Like, it's going to be tough to say that it's going in the right direction. I mean, it's not year two for Shane Beamer.
That's right.
Like, it would be, I think, a 3-9 or a 2-10 would be pretty tremendously I mean, they're not going to go 2-10. They still got Wofford, but they could
1-7. If they go 1-7 in the conference,
they could take on a lot of water down the stretch. Yep.
All right, we'll get to our final break. We'll update you on what's going on in the Major League Baseball playoffs. Of course, still time for you to join us, 334-321-1390, as we wind things down here on the Wednesday Drive.
Born and raised in Lee County, Samantha Copeland.
Baseball postseason, I don't know if there's I don't think there's a team that feels like an overwhelming favorite. And especially now with the Phillies and the Dodgers
trailing.
Yeah, the Phillies and the Dodgers facing elimination today, and the Yankees a game away from that if they were to lose tonight in Kansas City.
And now the Guardians are down 2-1. So all of your top seeds are in trouble. I mean, of course, the Yankees, they're still tied at a game apiece, but they're going on the road to Kansas City. So, I mean, that's coming up a little later on tonight. It is must-win time for the Phils and Dodgers today.
If you're neutral, like if you don't really care about a single baseball team. Well,
I would say, Tigers.
Well, you've got the Tigers, who have gone a long time without a title. The Padres have never won a championship. Mets fans are waiting.
It's been a while.
It's been 40 years.
Yep.
So, I mean, there are a couple of fan bases there are a couple starved fan bases in this postseason. And the Guardians have never won. The Guardians, it's been a long time for the Guardians as well. So I mean, there are a couple fan bases that could get an opportunity to win their first championship. I mean, even the Yankees, it's been 15 years.
Fifteen years
for the Yankees is a pretty long time.
Heck, they haven't even been a regular in the playoffs that much over the last.
I believe the 2010s are the only era of like real baseball that did not feature a Yankees appearance in the World Series. Like the Yankees, it's the only time, in an entire decade. It's the only one that didn't feature the Yankees in the World Series a single time. Yankees feel like the favorite right now.
They feel like, but like I said, they're going to KC.
I know,
now.
They're going to KC, and Kansas City's been playing good baseball. So I don't. Again, this one's really tough to handicap.
Yeah, meanwhile, right now, the Phillies, who I mentioned, they and the Dodgers, their backs against the wall. They can be eliminated tonight. The Phils break through with a run, an unearned run, off Jose Quintana, and they lead the Mets 1-0 with the Mets batting in the bottom of the fifth. The Mets have left base runners all over the place. 8 base runners allowed by by Ranger Suarez through the first 4 innings. As a matter of fact, in the first 2 innings, 6 base runners, but nobody scoring for the Mets. And he's given up 5 hits, 3 walks, but struck out 7 through the first 4.
I want to confirm, too, we will have Dodgers-Padres tonight on ESPN 106.7. So if you want to listen to what could be a very exciting baseball game,
you're
going to
hear a little. And if you think, man, they've got the crowd mics turned up too much, no. That's the crowd. Did you watch that last?
Oh yeah,
unbelievable.
Oh, it was awesome.
They were going crazy.
No, and a lot of a lot of guys in a lot of guys in the San Diego organization have played high level Latin league ball. You know what I mean? You go to Central America.
Yeah.
So I mean, and like between Machado, Tatis, like these guys, they love that. You know that they love an environment like that, and that's what it felt like. I mean, it was like watching a. I mean, it was like a World Cup game, really. That's what it seemed like last night in the crowd in San Diego, and yeah, I think the Dodgers would love to, they'd love to play the heel, go in there and steal one and get it back to Dodger Stadium. Padres would love to get one series closer to their first championship in the history of that organization.
Jerks and Profar is another one. Too.
Yeah, but, a couple of these guys.
Man,
love.
What a year he's had, and they have had. But I mean, yeah, the place was just insane with the yellow hankies.
Oh, they're having fun. Yeah,
but I mean, it's huge tonight. Like I said, so this is must win for the Phils and the Dodgers tonight, and the Dodgers going with a bullpen.
Dodgers game. Rolling with a bullpen game. Probably going to see Evan Phillips and Kopech and Vessia and whoever.
And they've got some good arms there in the pen, but somebody's got to give them a little length. They've got to get multiple innings out of a couple of guys, or at least one.
Yeah, I just
has got to give them three or four.
And that San Diego lineup is dangerous. Like, it so really many is. Of those guys just have. I mean, Tatis is destroying the ball right now.
Yeah.
And
O2 bomb.
I'd be nervous about pitching to him the way he's hitting right now. Yep. Like, that's a guy where you maybe
he is healthy. He's. I mean, you know, he missed so much time this year, and now he's really on a roll. But the Dodgers got a pretty good lineup too.
Well, Tatis is somebody in a kind of a star-crossed career so far between PED suspensions
and injuries,
including like a motorcycle accident. Yeah. Like, I mean, some odd injuries so far. When he's out there healthy and able to produce, very few guys, especially his age,
he's still 25, 26.
In Major League Baseball can do it like him. That's been on display. So far in this postseason.
Yeah, so it's going to be fun tonight. And that one you can hear on ESPN 106.7 coming up a little later on this evening.
Should have Ferg in the house next week. Didn't talk too much basketball today. But next week you've got the SEC.
Tip off at Toomers.
We've got SEC Media Days.
Right.
And tip off at Toomers. So a lot of basketball next week. And we'll ease into some of that with Ferg. We're going to record a basketball-only podcast as well this week for the Auburn bye week. So I think we'll talk quite a bit of hoops tomorrow with our buddy Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer.
That sounds good. We're out of time here on the Wednesday Drive. Our thanks to Jason Caldwell from Auburn Undercover for joining us. We'll be back with you tomorrow afternoon. Have a good one, everybody. We are out of here.